Good evening. It's great to be with you again. And it's been a wee bit longer than a month since the last time. But you'll make up for that soon, because only 2 weeks and I'll be here again. So we began last month studying the days of Noah. And we, from Genesis chapter 6, talked, and let me just remind you that Noah lived 4,600 years ago. We noted that he was a real historical person and has a very detailed family tree, and that Noah's flood, we also said, was a historical actual event. The flood was a historical actual event because the Lord Jesus says so. Genesis says so. The Lord Jesus says so. The Old Testament says so in many other places, and also the rest of the New Testament also says so. There are many, many references to Noah in the Bible. Even geology and geography say so, because our planet is covered in sedimentary rock that is laid down by water, that is full of fossils. And also human history says that the flood was a literal, actual event, because there are literally, and I give you a quote, there are literally hundreds of flood stories in almost every culture on every continent of planet Earth. So we are dealing with factual, historical happenings in Genesis, and especially as we're looking in Genesis and chapter 6 and chapters following. So we covered that, and it was called the historicity of those things. Now, tonight, I want to come and look at Noah the person with you. What type of a man was Noah? Noah has a reputation that everybody knows of him who's ever been to Sunday school. Noah was the man that built the ark. And if we know a little bit more, we know that he also sinned after the flood was over in drunkenness and so on. But let us truly look at Noah as a person, or Noah the man. I hope in the weeks following and the months following, next time, 2 weeks' time, we're going to look at Noah's world and what Noah's world led to, the society in which Noah lived, if you like. The month after that, we'll look at the ark and the dimensions of the ark, and the amount of animal kinds in the world, and could they fit into the ark? The month after that, we look at the flood, the flood waters, the extent of the flood waters, and where did the water come from, and where did it all go? The month after that, the aftermath of the flood, the land, the covenant that God made, and the commands that God gave Noah. Then the facts today will be another message: the ark, the fossil record, Christ's warnings, and days of Noah. And then the last message on this subject will be, what is the message of the flood as a whole message to consider? But tonight, Noah the person. I want to say four things about Noah. And the first thing is this: Noah was descended from Seth. Why am I saying that? Because what I'm wanting to say is basically this: Noah was brought up in a godly home. That's what I'm saying. Noah was a descendant from Seth. Who's Seth? Adam's third son. First was Cain. Then was Abel, who was the godly son. But Cain murdered Abel. And from Cain, after he'd murdered Abel, he went away, as we know. But from Cain came the godless line that now populates this world, basically. People like Cain. Cain's descendants, his immediate descendants, murdered people and justified the murder of people. We see that in Genesis chapter 4, is Cain's genealogy, as it were, his line of descent. And we see there murder happening and the man justifying it. the descendants of Cain. But then another son was born to Adam called Seth. And the godly line continued through Seth. And Noah was of that line. He was one of Seth's descendants. Noah's great, 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 great grandfather, six greats, was Seth, the son of Adam. Now, the point that I'm making is this. Noah was brought up in the godly way. He was a part of the godly line of descent, the godly genealogy. Indeed, Noah's great-grandfather was so much a man of God that he was taken straight to heaven. Enoch. That was Noah's great-grandfather. He was so godly. And Noah's own father, Lamech, called his son Noah, Noah. And why did he do that? Well, the name Noah means rest or comfort. And Noah called Noah, Noah. Sorry, Lamech called Noah, Noah, because Lamech knew that toil and hardship was in this world, and it was a result of human sin and God's curse. Now, it tells us that in Genesis 5:29. Note. Let me read from verse 28. And Lamech lived 182 years and begat a son. And he called his name Noah, saying, the same shall comfort us concerning the work and toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord, or Jehovah, hath cursed. So Lamech named his son in Noah because he knew that the reason why things were hard and the reason why life is troubled, he knew that it was human sin that had brought all this trouble down upon the human race. In other words, Lamech, the father of Noah, he knew far more than most modern people. And let me go further than that. Lamech knew far more than many Christians in the Western world. I remember a number of months ago hearing after a particular church meeting, you wouldn't know the people, I'm not going to name them, but there was a minister talking to another couple and some natural disaster had happened, and they were saying, oh, and so many Christians died, and you wonder why these things happen to Christians. What nonsense. Do we read the Bible? Lamech knew why bad things happen to good people. He knew it 4,600 years ago. But today in the West, we have whole groups of Christians who say, well, why did this happen to me? Why me? Why is life so hard? Why do bad things happen to good people? Lamech knew the answer to that thousands of years ago. Because we live in a cursed, fallen world, and these bad things happen because of human sin. We live in a world in which we need comfort and rest. So he named his son Noah. Just talking of names, Noah's name means comfort and rest. I noticed this in one of the commentaries, for what it's worth. It's a good commentary, actually. It's a Day One Publications commentary on Genesis. But see the list of names in Genesis 5, from Adam to Noah. Every name, not missing any out. Every name. Listen to this. Here's the names and their meanings. The word Adam means man. Then came Seth. Seth means appointed. These are the Hebrew meanings. Enos means mortal. Canaan was the next descendant, means sorrow. Mahalel means the God to be praised. Jared means shall come down or come down. Enoch means teaching. Methuselah, till it come or his death shall bring, because Methuselah died the year the flood came. The oldest man that ever lived didn't die in the flood, he died before it came. Lamech means despairing, and Noah means rest. So that's all the names in order. Now listen to the meanings of the names in order. Man appointed mortal sorrow. The God who is to be praised shall come down, teaching, his death shall bring, despairing, rest. That's the meaning of the names in order. Now, that's for what it's worth. How sovereign is God? Man appointed mortal sorrow, the God is to be praised, or the God is praised, shall come down, teaching, his death shall bring despairing rest. The gospel was even in the names, the meaning of the names of the godly line from Adam to Noah. But that's not the point of me saying all that. The point is this. Noah is of the line of Seth. He was part of the godly line. He had a good upbringing. Noah had a good upbringing. God's name would have been mentioned in his home, and this influenced the boy Noah. And that leads us very smoothly to the second point about Noah. Noah was a man of God. It says in Genesis in chapter 6, verses 8 and 9, "But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God." In other words, God raised up a man different, very different from the whole generation in which he lived. Noah was a man of God. And how did he become a man of God? It tells us Noah found grace. That lovely little English word, grace, in the eyes of the Lord. Noah found undeserved favor and mercy in God's eyes, which he didn't deserve. And it goes on to say, not only did he find grace in the eyes of God, but it says he was just and perfect in his generation. The word just means he was righteous. The word perfect, the Hebrew word here, apparently means upright. He walked uprightly in his generation. And again, the Hebrew word means in the world or the society in which he lived, in his time. So here's a man of whom it says in Genesis 6 very clearly, who sticks out as being different from the generation in which he lived. Because God has just been saying in verse 5 of the very same chapter, God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and the very imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And he goes on in verse 11 to say that the whole world was filled with violence. God's just been saying that. The whole world and society was absolutely wicked. But among all that, here's a man who's different. Grace, found grace, just or righteous, perfect or upright, and walking with God. Society hadn't squeezed Noah into its mold. He's upright and he's just. And it's just, no doubt it was the same in those days as it is today, because human nature has never changed. Not one bit has human nature changed since the fall. Anyone who sticks out as different from everybody else is looked upon as a wee bit odd, aren't they? You're odd if you don't go with the flow and be the same as everybody else. That's why there's peer pressure in schools. That's why children get beat up if they don't wear the right trainers. or have the right label on their clothes, and it happens all the time. If you're different, you're looked upon as odd, and no doubt in Noah's day, he would have been looked upon as odd as well. Because when they were all walking in their own way, following their own lusts, going according to the intents of their own hearts and doing what they wanted, drunkenness, parties and pleasure, when they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage, like Jesus says, Noah, verse 9, was walking with God. Totally different. So Noah found grace. He was righteous. He was upright in his life, and he walked with God because Noah was a man of faith. And that's why I got our brother Colin to read from Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 17. Another wonderful verse that gives us, another wonderful verse that gives us a sidelight on Noah. It says, by faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness, which is by faith. By faith, it says, Noah did this. So Noah had biblical faith. It's undeniable. It says it there. And not only does it say that, it says, and he was an heir of the righteousness which is by faith. The word heir simply means the inheritor. The heir is someone who will inherit. Noah had biblical faith, and he was the inheritor. He inherited righteousness by faith. Righteousness, justification by faith. In other words, what it's saying is Noah was definitely saved. Noah was justified by faith. He was an heir. He inherited righteousness by faith. The exact same as Abraham. No difference at all in the area of salvation. Old Testament or New Testament, it is always salvation by faith. Discovering these things was great for me in the past, because I was brought up very confused and thought that the Old Testament people were saved in a different way, because we had very little teaching in our church. Anyway, Noah was saved by faith because he found grace in God's eyes. God had come and poured grace upon Noah. Noah was righteous and upright, and he walked with God in his generation. Let me give you a quote from this Whelan commentary on Genesis. In other words, the term suggests that there was no noticeable blot on his character. He stood out head and shoulders above his contemporaries. As in the case of Job, there was a completeness about his life. Within that corrupt society, he tried to keep himself unspotted from the world. It is a sad fact that where standards have fallen in society, Christians have often followed the downward trend. Paul urges believers not to copy the behavior and lifestyles of this world in Romans 12. And Noah walked with God. Here is a clue why he stood out. He didn't get sucked down by the pressures of the world. Like Enoch before him, he lived in close fellowship with God. That is the remedy against worldliness, a personal, ongoing, vital relationship with God. So, dear ones who are God's children, like Noah, you also are an heir, an inheritor of the exact same righteousness, which is by faith. But the challenge to us is, like Noah, though we be inheritors of the same righteousness, like Noah, are we just and upright and walking with God? in our generation. That's what must come to the believer. It's not easy by any means to walk in this way in our generation, ever, in any generation. Satan has all sorts of devices to lure God's people into worldliness and sin and to make them appear the same as the world, to make them fit in, blend in, be unnoticeable. Well, Noah didn't blend in. Drastically different. And so must we be different. If we were in court accused of being men and women of God, would there be enough evidence to convict us? Oh, there would be. They would look and see so many Bibles and books, and oh, he goes to the prayer meeting, she goes. They would know it. That's the way it should be. The essence of vital religion is walking with God. Now, that's 2 points so far about Noah. He's a descendant of Seth, or he was in the godly line. Secondly, he is a man of God. And because of that, thirdly, Noah warned God about this. God warned Noah about the flood. 12 to 14 of Genesis 6, 12 to 14. Turn back over. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make thee an ark of gopher wood and rooms, and pitch it within and without with pitch. God warned Noah about his own generation. God warned the man, Noah, and told Noah what was going to happen. God often does that with those that are close to him. That's the ones in the Bible that God revealed. Didn't he reveal his plans to the prophets and to Moses and to Abraham and to Jeremiah and to Daniel, even the Apostle John, the Lord Jesus, to those three disciples that were closest to him? He revealed more, didn't he? God reveals his plans from his word to those that are close to him. And God revealed his plans to Noah, and God warned Noah that the judgment was going to fall. And he also told Noah about this way to escape the judgment, the ark. Because God does that. He often does that for his people. And what happened? Noah obeyed God. He was warned when God warned him, and he did what God told him to do. And that brings us to the fourth point. Noah was a preacher of righteousness. That's what we must remember. God raised this man, Noah, and he was to warn his generation. It says in 2 Peter 2 and 5, that God spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing the flood upon the world of the ungodly. Noah was a preacher of righteousness, it says in 2 Peter. The Greek word is kerusso. It's the word for authoritative, herald-like preaching. He didn't come and share a message. He came, like a herald comes, in the old days he used to come and ring a bell and announce the message from the king, just announce it on the authority of the king, and that's what Noah did. He heralded righteousness. He came with authority and he preached. What does the word righteousness mean? It means justification. And it also means justice. The state, says the Greek dictionary, of a man, the state in which a man may attain to a state approved of God. We can't do it. It's Christ's righteousness only. We know that. But Noah preached and he told people how to get right with God. But he also told people about God's justice. Because you see, righteousness, if you speak about the righteousness of Christ being imputed to us, it's all meaningless without justice. Righteousness and justice must always go together, because why would you need imputed righteousness without justice? You have to have both. So to preach righteousness, you must preach justice, because that's another way in which this word is very often and must be interpreted. So Noah was a preacher of righteousness. He preached the judgment is coming to his generation. Justice is coming, and you need to get right with God. He was a gospel preacher. So God raised this man to warn the generation in which he lived. And who listened? Please note, I didn't find this in any of the commentaries, by the way, but I just noticed it because I happened to be looking at the genealogies as well as Genesis 6. Notice a cause of great sadness to Noah. In chapter 5, verse 30, it says these words: "And Lamech lived after he begat Noah 595 years, and begat sons and daughters," plural. Noah had brothers and sisters, and not one of them was on the ark. Not one. Noah was on the ark, his wife was on the ark, Noah's three sons and their three wives. There were eight people on the ark. Eight people only listened to the preacher of righteousness. He was a preacher of righteousness, but not only did the society in which he lived not listen to the message from God, but even members of his own family did not listen to the message from God. And I believe that in the light of that, which is plainly in the Bible, I believe that Noah would have been a somber, serious man. He wouldn't have been cracking a joke every 5 minutes, but these things would have weighed upon his mind and burdened him as a preacher of righteousness and knowing what God had said to him. But he kept preaching the unpopular message, but the people and the hearers did not listen. As Jesus says in Matthew 24, "And they knew not." See those Greek words? There's two Greek words. "And they knew not." You know what it means? They did not pay attention. That's a direct translation. It's not they were ignorant. It doesn't mean that at all. It means they knew not. They did not pay attention until the day the flood came and took them all away. There came a day when they paid attention. They wouldn't pay attention until the very day the flood came, when they saw the beginning of the judgment, but already God had closed the door. Willful ignorance. Willful. Noah the person. Descended from Seth is the first point. He's the godly home, godly line. Second point, a man of God. Faith, righteousness, uprightness, walking with God, different from the world. Thirdly, Noah was warned of God. God took Noah, as it were, into his confidence. And fourthly, Noah was a preacher of righteousness. This family man was different from all his generation. He was warned by God about his generation, and then he warned his generation of God's judgment. God in all history, since the beginning, in every generation, has placed men and women, his people, who are different from the generation in which they live. He has placed and raised up men who have warned the generation in which they live, always. Men who have warned their generation that there's a judgment to come. Preachers of righteousness. And in the United Kingdom, and most specifically in Northern Ireland, we have had many, many of these men. But for about the last 140 years, the people have not listened. And our nation and the people of our nation are going headlong in their sin, in their materialism, headlong in their mockery and blasphemy and their murder and their thievery and their lying. In this nation that had John Owen, Thomas Watson, Thomas Manton, Lloyd-Jones, Spurgeon, all the generations, and many, many others. But look at the current generation. Look at them. Listen to this. It says this in Proverbs 30. There is a generation that curseth their father, and doth not bless their mother. There is a generation that are pure in their own eyes, yet is not washed from their filthiness. There is a generation, oh how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up. There is a generation whose teeth are as swords, and their jaw teeth as knives, to devour the poor from off the earth and the needy from among men. There's a generation, verse 11, that have no respect. Four wicked generations. There's a generation in verse 12 who don't believe there's any such thing as sin, but yet they themselves are steeped in it. There's a generation, verse 13, that are so proud. They're arrogant, verse 14, and they're violent. But to whom are they violent? The poor and the needy and the weak. There's a generation who are aggressive, violent, and materialistic. Look at the generation we have. Ignorant, willfully obstinate, rebellious, and scornful towards God. And our leaders, our politicians, are leading in the godlessness. Even the laws that are being framed are leading in the sin and godlessness. Oh yes, there's a generation now in the United Kingdom, and they have not listened to the preachers of righteousness. Indeed, they are mockers of the preachers of righteousness. But nothing much has changed, because they didn't listen in Noah's day either. But even though they didn't listen and wouldn't pay attention, it didn't make 1 second of difference to the judgment. The judgment came exactly as God said it would and when he said it would. And their ignorance and disbelief of it made no difference whatsoever. And they all, without exception, died. And I am simply a preacher to warn. And if I could, I'd warn the whole nation. It's one of the reasons why I'm in sermon audio. I would warn the Prime Minister if I could get into him. I'd warn the whole of the government if I could. And I would say this: justice is coming. And judgment is certainly coming. Because you cannot murder 300 babies every day in the womb in the United Kingdom and get away with it. Justice is coming. You cannot legally promote perversion and get away with it. You can't obliterate God's word from your schools and your society and get away with it. You cannot persecute God's people and hinder gospel witness and get away with it. That's what I would tell them. I wouldn't go and tell them the gospel. I would warn them of judgment and the law of God that they have flaunted. And you'll face the consequences of it all. And this nation is going to be judged of God. A few weeks ago, I was in Derek's church and he was in mine. And he came over in the afternoon. I stayed in Lorne. And we were all sitting around talking. And Derek said, he says, just as part of the discussion, things have been bad in the days of Whitfield in our nation, but revival still came. And did I think personally that that will happen again? And I said, I would love it to happen again, but I don't think it will. I said, I pray that I'm wrong, but I don't think it will. And he said, why? And I said, in the days of Whitfield, yes, the politicians were drunk and there was a lot of bad things going on, but sin was still sin. It was still called sin. But according to Isaiah chapter 5, woe to them that call evil good and good evil. And on the basis of Romans chapter 1, Lloyd-Jones says there are stages in sin. There's sin with shame. Now, worse than that is sin with no shame. The next stage of depravity, this is all on the basis of Isaiah 5, by the way. The next stage of depravity is no sin. Don't believe in sin anymore. But the worst stage is perversion. We actually reverse good and evil and call evil good and good evil. And I said, according to my knowledge of what I see, on the basis of Romans 1, our nation is in a far worse state because we are now in a state of moral perversion where we call good evil and evil good and we legislate for it, and that's worse. And according to Romans 1, that's a sign that God has given a people over. And I said, and the second reason why I think that it's judgment and not revival is this. According to the Old Testament, especially Obadiah, which I preached through in 10 weeks, and Nahum, and also you can look at the first two chapters of Amos, when pagan nations, the whole book of Obadiah is about Edom, the pagan nation of Edom that persecuted the people of God. And when you take what that says and those other books have talked about and other passages in the Old Testament, whenever, as well as on top of moral perversion and being given over to the terrible sin of Romans 1, the second great sin is when a nation starts to persecute the people of God, God wipes them out. And that's what happened in the Old Testament with the Edomites in the book of Obadiah. Because when the Babylonians came, the Edomites, they stood at the crossroads, and the Israelites that were trying to flee, they captured them and handed them back to death. And I said, on the basis of that, those two things, I think we're far worse than in the days of Whitfield. We persecute the church today and believers legally in the United Kingdom, and we have reversed morality to absolute perversion. So that's why I think it's judgment. And I hope I'm wrong. But there is judgment coming. And for anyone who's not saved, I say it for, it's being recorded, I know that. Let me tell you Noah's message. You need to get right with God. There, you need to become righteous, and you can't become righteous because you're unrighteous by nature. And the only way you can become right with God is through faith in Jesus Christ, so that his perfect righteousness is put in your account and counted as you being righteous, therefore. And then you need to walk with God and find grace in the eyes of the Lord. You'll realize when you're saved that that's why you're saved, because you've found grace in God's eyes. Everyone needs to listen to the gospel to escape the judgment. And I said to my folk in Wade Abbey, you might go to hell from this church, because people have before. Regular attenders go out and die and go to hell who are not saved, but you'll not go ignorantly. Because if you go to hell from a gospel preaching church, it'll be willfully. And isn't it true, in any gospel preaching church where the people are membership saved and the preacher preaches the gospel, for anyone who goes to hell from a church like that has to pass by a people and a church and a preacher that open their arms and say, stop and consider God's righteousness and consider the judgment that is to come and turn from your sin to Christ. And anyone who goes to hell from a gospel preaching church has to go past those obstacles, past those open arms, and continue on their way to hell. It's not by accident, it's not ignorantly, it's absolutely willful, and they have no one to blame but themselves. You don't go into eternal fire by accident from a gospel preaching church, because the gospel preaching church will preach that God is righteous. That's why we need justification. That's why we need an imputed righteousness. Because God is righteous. That's why you can't have one without the other. God is righteous. And the words of Jesus say, enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Noah. Is it any wonder Noah was a preacher of righteousness? I want to finish with two quotes, or a few quotes, from the Puritans. Listen to Thomas Watson. Thomas Watson says, where did I put those glasses, dear me? I'm not used to glasses. Okay, he says this. He's speaking about, this is just in the line with a preacher of righteousness. The flood came and took them all away, and they all went to hell. That's what happened. Thomas Watson says this. Thus, it is in hell they would die. They would die. Those in hell would die, but they cannot. The wicked shall always be dying, but never dead. The smoke of the furnace ascends up forever and ever. Oh, who can endure thus to be ever upon the rack? The word ever breaks the heart. Wicked men now think Sabbaths long and think prayer long. But oh, how long will it be to lie in hell forever? If the earth and sea were sand, and every 1,000 years a bird should come and take away one grain of sand, it would be a long time ere that whole heap of sand were emptied. Yet, if after all that time, the damned were to come out of hell, there would be some hope. But this word, ever, breaks the heart. Flavel says, wrath to come implies both the futurity and perpetuity of this wrath. Yea, it is not only certainly in the future, but when it comes, it will be abiding wrath or wrath still coming. When millions of ages are past and gone, this will still be wrath to come, ever coming, as ever a river flows. That's why Noah was a preacher of righteousness. Amen. Thank you for your attention tonight.